Today's episode, what if we had a draft to replace recruiting? Deep thoughts. Also, helmet communications are here, and a Kentucky high school prank goes way, way wrong.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I have 2 points. One, if I could go 7 years without talking with Pat, that would just be... that guy is my hero. He got to go 7 years. I've been angry at Pat for 7 years.
Ross Dellinger.
Everything kind of goes back to recruiting. And I think that question is, how do you get rid of it? And certainly one of the ways mentioned by a few in the industry is have a draft.
And SI's Pat Forty.
If we could draft our employees, we wouldn't have to have the waterfall and the lazy river and the 19 people on the recruiting staff and all the other things that go along into building up a weaponized athletic department.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And this little news nugget works great for what we were wanting to discuss and tease. We teased it a week ago. Alert listeners, we're coming back to you. That we wanted to discuss, what if they got rid of recruiting in college football, which is a tremendous debate or point. They're not, I don't believe, but who knows? I did not know this was going to eventually happen. The Dartmouth men's basketball team. You guys big fans? Huge. What are they, the Big Green? Yeah. Are they the Big Green? Big Green. Big Green. I don't think they're usually that good, but whatever.
I think they were last in the Ivy League, but they won a big one, I think, last night against Harvard after they voted to unionize. So there you go.
Oh, tremendous. They have unionized. There it is. 13-2 vote. The men's basketball team joined the Service Employee International Union and a local chapter, and has declared themselves employees and a part of a union after a National Labor Relations Board ruled they were employees of the school. Now, a couple things that are fascinating about this, but maybe it leads to this draft idea actually happening. I don't know. These days, can't really rule anything out. So I did not think of all the athletes on all the college campuses that would be employees. It would be the Dartmouth men's basketball team. They don't receive scholarships. And supposedly, they don't receive preferential admissions, although I think they do. My guess is they most certainly do. But they are employees, and they are in a union now. First off, what does that mean? Anyone know? I really don't care about the men's basketball team at Dartmouth. I'm sorry. But it's a canary in the coal mine. What does this mean? Anyone?
Well, it means that the local chapter of the National Labor Relations Board, which controls collective bargaining law in the U.S., has deemed them employees, and they voted to join this union. And thus, maybe after or during the appeals process, because Dartmouth is appealing the ruling, they will be able to collectively bargain the union on behalf of the players with Dartmouth. I don't know what they're going to be able to collectively bargain. Dartmouth men's basketball loses hundreds of thousands of dollars every year.
Probably more.
It's an interesting, it's an interesting place for this to happen. Like you mentioned, right? You could see that the top half of the FBS, it's football and basketball players, because of the money that those sports generate, the salaries that the coaches make and all that, it would make more sense for them to be ruled employees. The fact that Dartmouth men's basketball was ruled employees probably is a sign that one day everyone playing college athletics may be ruled employees in some way. But, you know, we're a long way from getting some finality here. There's an appeals process that has to go to the National Labor Relations Board here in Washington, D.C. It's a five-member, actually, board, but they're absent one member right now. So it's a four-member board that will rule on whether to let this stand or not. You guys remember Northwestern football did this 10 years ago, and the election was never publicly revealed, the vote. But the local chapter, again, the local NLRB ruled that Northwestern football players could unionize. They voted, but before it was released, the national board basically rejected it on appeal, so did not uphold the local ruling. So that's where we are with this case. It's going to the national board. But if the national board upholds it, it still then could go to federal court and could go to the Supreme Court. So we're a long way from getting some kind of finality here.
Yeah. It is fascinating. Dartmouth last had a winning season in basketball in 1999. they're terrible. They have always been terrible. You could say that objectively, the employees are bad at their job, but that doesn't mean they're not employees.
Yeah.
You know, the argument can be made, certainly. And you start getting into some of the arguments that were made about controlling the athletes in terms of their schedules and the amount of hours put into practice and preferential treatment at admissions and all these things that I can't say I ever really rolled into considering that as an employment indicator, but I mean, it happens all over the place. You know, that there are athletes who get preferential treatment and then they get into school and they are shepherded towards certain majors and away from others, and they're told, here is the football schedule, work your academic schedule around it. You know, there is a lot of controlling of the educational experience there. So, but yeah, like, it's just kind of cosmically funny to me that Duke, okay, this needs to be a private school, right? Because state employment laws are different. And so private schools are where this is playing out. But Duke basketball, Baylor basketball, Creighton basketball, you could maybe see a little bit more than the worst team
Notre
in
Dame
Ivy League.
Football. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. The argument is like, okay, I get it. Notre Dame football, you have this, the biggest building on the campus is the football stadium. You have a television deal specifically with a network. You, all those things, you can clearly make the argument. And I think even if you oppose the idea that they become employees, you're like, yeah, they got a point. Dartmouth basketball is pretty funny. And quite honestly, the preferential admission into an Ivy League school, not that it matters, but what is the monetary, you are what you're willing to get paid, but that is a significant compensation.
Yes.
To get an Ivy League degree when you didn't merit the Ivy League degree. And if you look at some of these Ivy League schools are really small, like the athletes make up 30-40% of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's an amazing number. We won't go down my rabbit hole of its of all of that, because most of the sports require enormous amounts of money to play. But certainly the basketball team. So I guess they could be employees. So I don't know. It's the next step. Seems like the weakest possible case you could have, which might actually be pretty interesting, because if this ever got ruled, if a non-scholarship Ivy League basketball team that loses money for their university are deemed employees, then, right, it's like winning with the worst argument would be pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I guess we'll see. All right.
Well, so, and there's a separate, you know, there's a separate NLRB case out in LA that focuses on USC.
Yes.
Specifically, you know, and that's obviously more notable, and that's, they're in the middle of a hearing, multiple day hearing that has spanned a few weeks now. And so that's a case to monitor as well. It's somewhat similar though. This didn't come about because of a unionization effort. It came about from a complaint from the National College Players Association to the NLRB, complaining basically that USC and the NCAA, and at the time the Pac-12, were joint employers of USC athletes because of the control that they have on the athletic body, specifically football in men's and women's basketball. So another case to monitor as we march toward athlete employment.
So you floated this argument or this debate topic or whatever, this point, and I think we've all heard it, about what if there was no recruiting, let's just go with college football. First off, I wouldn't feel very good about this because I need to obsess about some player I've never seen in a town I've never heard of and what hat he will pick. It's mesmerizing content. I need the mom bay angry.
Oh, yeah.
I need the little sisters in the coordinated shirts like they were in on it, but mom thought I need all of it. Maybe they bring out a little puppy because they're going to Georgia or something. Like, I need that. I need that in my life. So I'm not in favor of this solely for my own.
It would remove a lot of content, wouldn't it, Dan?
Yes. My personal content enjoyment would leave. So I oppose this, even if it is the proper stance. But we don't know. Ross, who wants to describe what this would entail? If we got rid of recruiting, Adam Gorney at Rivals is having a heart attack listening to this right now.
Yeah, we'd find all more work for you guys. Right?
We'd find, yeah. Yeah, we'd take care of our rivals,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll find something for you. But what is this argument? Because it is actually being discussed at some fairly high levels.
Yeah.
What if we got rid of recruiting? We're going to Super League if we're doing it. Explain yourself, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, this obviously is... feels a little far-fetched, but as you mentioned there, right, in both meetings in SEC and Big Ten, it's at least one of the things that have been broached. I don't know that it's been seriously dissected in those leagues, and it does feel kind of ahead of its time, so to speak. So I don't know how serious it is, but it's certainly something that's been broached of how to – and it answers the question of, you know, how to get rid of recruiting, because it's probably responsible for, I don't know, at least 90%, maybe 95% of the quote issues within college football. I mean, think about how much a university invests in attracting athletes through the recruiting process, whether it be facilities or coaching salaries, getting the best coaches, all that stuff, you know, in recruiting budgets. And coaches complaining about, you know, the year-round grind, most of it is recruiting. It just, everything kind of goes back to recruiting. And I think that question is, how do you get rid of it? And certainly one of the ways mentioned by a few in the industry is have a draft. You know, that certainly gets complicated and complex. I'm going to let Pat take it from there about how you would be able to have a draft and how complex it would be, because it certainly would be incredibly complicated and ties back into the conversation we were just having, which is, to have a draft, they have to be employees.
Right. Yes, that's the bottom line here, is that you would be drafting a workforce. And there are people that take issue with the NFL draft, the NBA draft, the MLB draft, and say you shouldn't be able to dictate to somebody where they're going to work. But that's a different argument. But yeah, as last August, I guess I had my first conversation with one Power Conference AD about this. And he said, if we could draft our employees, we wouldn't have to have the waterfall and the lazy river and the 19 people on the recruiting staff and all the other things that go along into building up this kind of weaponized athletic department, because we'd be able to choose our workers instead of them choosing us. So that was the premise for it. The discussion, as we teased it out, it was interesting. So it's like, okay, you want to have a draft. How do you take the top, you take the power conference teams, and just how do you come up with orders? Like, well, the power conference probably wouldn't agree to draft with each other. So you'd probably have to have four different drafts. Right? The Big Ten would have a draft. The SEC would have a draft. The Big 12 would have a draft. The ACC would have a draft. And then it's up to the players to weigh the options and decide, which, yeah, in a way, would be its own form of recruiting. Well,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why they all would probably need to get together, you would think.
Right. They would have to. And then, of course, now in the current climate, they'd get together and the Big Ten would say, well, we get the first five picks, and the SEC, us and the SEC get the first 10 picks. You guys can pick after that. So, I mean, there's a lot of complications to it. I don't see it happening in the near future. It may never happen. But it's an interesting concept that was broached about, once they become employees, is there a different way to go about getting your players, your talent on campus, quote unquote campus, if there's still even campus entities?
Okay, so I want to say this first. You know, the waterfall, the Alabama waterfall, no longer there.
Really?
They scaled it back.
Wow.
What is it like?
I don't know, but the poor Alabama waterfall is poor is one out. Just, it's still getting bashed. It's still getting bashed.
Side of a marble mountain in there?
I believe it no longer exists. That is, I believe that no longer. It's sort of like the cream cheese on the bagel story or like.
Like they tore it down to make offices for the next 27 analysts.
They turned into a wall of gold bricks. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it like it's just this like cinder block wall now. I'm just saying as my understanding is the waterfall is gone. So we should stop using that as the example of we need a new one. We need a
Clemson
new one.
Miniature golf course.
Yeah, still fine. There? There's a slide inside the, you know, nap room. I don't know. We have this. You see this TCU story? I'm going to bring this up right now. TCU has a snow room.
Yes.
TCU. This is a way to, you know, you go in a cold tub. They now have a snow room. You can get 8 to 10 dudes in there or users. I guess anybody can use it, any athlete. And you sit in the snow room. It is sub-freezing temperatures, and they will have actual flurries, snow flurries, to assist in the post-practice and workout recovery process. And the snow will be purple.
How much extra do you have to pay for purple snow?
I don't,
you know, when
you're pretty much just got to dye the mist. So not much, but okay. Like, I'm still like, how, who's this? Someone shoveled? Is it going to be slippery? Like a flurry? Do you rock salt on the ground? There's a lot of questions. I'm not.
Do you got to wear snow boots when you go in?
I'd feel a lot better if Minnesota came up with the snow room first. I feel like TCU is out of their. I covered a Super Bowl and there was snow in Dallas, Fort Worth, and it was a mess. They were throwing sand on the road and people were slipping everywhere. It was a disaster. They didn't know what they were doing. So very smart people at TCU, right? Horn Frogs figure a lot of stuff out, but I'm not sure you guys. But anyway, yeah, you probably would be able to say, let's just save money on the purple. So you would save a tremendous amount of money not having all the bells and whistles, the graphic artists, all that stuff. No question. So we'd have to have like combines. I mean, this would be.
Oh, now you're seeing.
I would admit
the rivals guys can still have a job here. They can still have a job.
So what if everybody said, let's say you did, the Big Ten will screw this thing up. They will absolutely, they're destroying everything. But let's say that they would just say, okay, everyone gets a pick. Or what if you did this? You said, I'm signing with the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
So you commit to the SEC and then you join the SEC, you go into the SEC draft pool and you sign a binding deal with a cop because they're talking about that as employment because there's all these different employment laws, right? And like some places, public employees can't be in a union, some states. So maybe but if you go to a conference, you could be an employee then of the conference. So let's say you did that. And then you just had this massive, you had like a combine and you got whatever, 500, what would you need? I guess 16, you need about 25 guys a year in a class.
Yep.
So what's that, 400?
I will 400, say.
500 guys saying I'm in. And then you just draft this thing, snake draft, reverse order. Like, holy cow, that would be just like the NFL. It would be so exciting.
It would be unbelievable. People would lose their minds. They would love it and hate it at the same time.
I mean, they love the NFL draft.
Yeah.
They love it for months. It's I think Alabama's gonna take the kid from Moss Point. Yeah. No, they're over in LaGrange. Like, who's the quarterback? Oh my God. Can you imagine? It'd be better than the Hats.
It'd be much better. It'd be fantastic. You get Sankey up there on the podium with the first pick in the Southeastern Conference draft. Vanderbilt would have a chance.
Yes.
Exactly. I was about to say, like, the thing that a draft potentially does is it levels the playing field and it's supposed to bring parity, right?
In a huge way.
There's a lot of people in college athletics, though, that don't want parity because they're at the top of the sport. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that probably would push against this because they, you know, whoever it may be, the Alabamas, the Ohio States of the world, whatever, that have the advantage right now because of recruiting and money and resources and facilities and all that stuff, that I would guess that they would push back pretty strongly on this.
Yeah, they absolutely would. They absolutely would. But even you could argue in a like you'd never get all the leagues to get together. Like Pat
no,
said,
that's what's been proven impossible.
Right, right. They're gonna.
But what if, what if you're Caleb Williams or somebody, you know, that stature is like, well, I don't want to necessarily just be an SEC draftee. What I'm considering a Big Ten school. I'm considering an ACC school.
Well, then somebody else. Look, nobody has to go to the NFL. You can go play the XFL. You go to Canada, right? You don't have to play in the NFL. You put yourself out there and you do it. Now, obviously, everyone wants to play in the NFL, but you could argue for some players that there's a better opportunity to be a Canadian Football League player. Let's say you're like they take like Julian Edelman. Okay. Julian Edelman obviously became an unbelievable wide receiver in the NFL, but coming out of college, he's like a shifty quarterback.
Yeah. He was an option quarterback at Kent State.
So it worked out for Julian Edelman, obviously, to say the least. But at that point, maybe like a guy like a Julian Edelman says, you know, if I go to Canada, I could play like 10 years as QB up here. Just there's all this big field. I don't know. Obviously, it doesn't happen. Anyway, you could sit there and say, yeah, I'm not doing the SEC. And other leagues could then be like the Freedom Conference, right? Like, hey, man, we'll just take whoever shows up. Like the Mountain West could just bask in like liberty and just be like, yeah, I don't. It would be wild. It would be absolutely wild. But I think the only way this could possibly work, and I don't believe this could possibly work, is if you went conference by conference, because I think it's hard enough to get the LSU, Alabama, Georgias that are sitting there saying, I mean, LSU right now is two of the top five players in the country committed for next year. Now you're going to tell them you're going to get one of the top 16.
Yeah.
That you're going to get, right? Like, you're going, heck no.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we see that, right? We used to see it. I mean, there were years for Alabama and Georgia, you know, pre-NIL, they were getting 14 of the top 100. Like, it was insane. Oh, yeah. Like, if you have four top 100, you have four to five top 100 picks in the NFL draft, you are sitting pretty. And they were getting 14 top 100 picks. Like, no wonder you won. And then every year they get 14 top picks. So how are you telling someone that you're now going to get five or whatever? I mean, this would be a smaller league. I don't know. It'd be fun, though, I guess.
It would be fun.
One of the big issues would certainly be you're telling players where to go to school, where to go to college. Right. There's that too.
Again. Right. air quotes on school again. Like if we're going employee route, where you know is
right, but
licensed
what if,
semi-professionalism next?
If you want to study something and this place doesn't have it, or I mean, look, not every like okay, we have a Vanderbilt. Not everyone's built for Vanderbilt. It's okay. I wasn't. I wouldn't want to go there. I'd be smoked. I don't want that smoke in the classroom. I couldn't handle it, right? I don't want to be around those kids. But what if you get drafted into Vanderbilt and you're like, dude, like I got rocking a 2.1 here at my county high school. I ain't going to Vanderbilt. Or if you're like the Vanderbilt type guy and they're like, well, you got to go to this school. And you're like, dude, come on, man. It's a safety school. What are we doing here? I worked hard to go. Right. So, it defeats the entire purpose of like, of everything.
Pretty much, yeah.
And yet they're discussing
it. Fun to talk about.
And yet they're discussing it.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it wouldn't completely like eliminate. We talked about how it eliminates recruiting. If you eliminate recruiting, you would eliminate, you know, a lot of money spent. A lot on the budgets, but you know, they would find a new way to spend the money. Not just own the players either. You would have like massive draft scouting teams, sure. probably, sure. right? You'd have all of that. So you'd still be spending money. So it's pretty far-fetched, but I think the question is the right question to ask, though, is how do we diminish or get rid of the recruiting process or eliminate it in some way? Because it is at the heart of kind of like all these issues that we've discussed now for several years.
So is allowing collectives to... And I know this will probably go away, but is allowing collectives to make deals play a role in that? Because if we are to believe what these guys are saying, that all these dudes want is the most money, which isn't true, but they want some money. But by making money a factor, money is an active dollar. I always talk about the passive dollar of college sports has no problem with passive dollars. Let's build the waterfall. Then let's get rid of the waterfall because it's too much criticism. Let's build the waterfall. Let's build the recruiting rooms. Let's make sure that the you check into your Fairfield Inn and there's posters all over the room of you. Let's make sure every coach is sending you graphics and things like that. Those are passive dollars. The bigger weight room. We have to get you to campus to the weight room, right? I say this often, but like the New England Patriots have one locker room, a weight room, at least the last time I was there, which with a curtain that separates it from the locker room, and a bubble out back, and one practice field. That's it, right? You can go to Purdue football, and their facilities will absolutely destroy the New England Patriots. So you don't have to do all that because they're just sitting there going, look. We'll take you $3.5 million. I got room at this position or whatever. $7 million over 3 years, and they go. So will this actually cut back? Could you cut back on some of the recruiting ridiculousness because finances are now more openly discussed, and your collective's kind of doing it. The same way by getting rid of so many rules, you could cut back on your compliance staff.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's happening now a little bit, right? Yeah, I think already schools have started to some schools have already started to scale back on facilities or pulling facility funding in asking their donors instead to donate to the collective and not these facility upgrades. So to an extent, that's already happening. I would guess if we continue on this road, that will continue to happen.
Yeah, snow room aside at TCU, I think that's definitely the trend is more towards invest in player salaries than investing in bells and whistles to attract non-salaried non-employees because salaries and employment status, I think everybody is pretty sure is coming. And, so yes, the collective fills a role until, the collectives go away and then the schools are just directly paying
right.
players or the correct collectives are marginalized or whatever. But I would think and I would also think if you ask the coaches, they would be happy to hear, oh, we don't have to kiss the players' asses 18 hours a day for 5 months to get them to sign. We can instead just say, here, Chuck, work out this business deal over here and we'll see you on signing day. I mean, I would think they would enjoy that more.
This would also be, a draft would also be a step, another change in college football that emulates the NFL, right? And so you would probably have a lot of pushback, I think, in a way, because I think a lot of fans and a lot of people are not liking the trend of college football, drifting more toward the NFL, but this certainly would be like a huge jump, right? That would mirror what the NFL does. But college football, as we know and as we've discussed plenty, makes so much money at the highest level that's the reason that it's drifting more toward the NFL, which also makes a lot of money.
Yeah, I would say that. you know, there are definitely different schools of thought here. There's trying to think of it from the school's perspective or the coach's perspective or the AD's perspective, and then there's thinking of it from a fan's perspective. And I do think while athletes have deserved more and are getting more and will continue to get more, there might come a point where fans are going to say, this is NFL light, and I'm not really as into it as I was.
It's certainly possible. There is a value in the concept that so-and-so chose to go to school where I chose to go to school.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I think in most cases, I think they kind of got rid of the athletic dorms. You know,
they went away and they've come back.
They've kind of come back. They found ways to work around it. But he's my favorite players at the same dining, and they got rid of the dining table. I mean, they kind of got rid of all this stuff. But the idea, he's walking the same way to class I did, and he got to campus and thought this is a great place, and they're hanging out in the same area. Like there's a real connection, right? And I do think that plays huge value. That said, if you're a great player, they're going to love, like, Patrick Mahomes did not choose the Kansas City to live in Kansas City.
Right.
I don't think anybody in Kansas City gives a crap that he got basically forced to come there. Right. No. They love him to death. You mean you love your athlete if he's there? And we had to bribe him to come. Right. We had to get this free agent, we had to overpay, but he's here now. Right. Or he got traded against his will, held out, whatever. Doesn't matter. He got five TDs, you know. So fans will get over that. But there is undoubtedly a bit on that. I will say this. I mean, obviously, such a sea change. Coaches would like, they claim they would like it because they're complaining that they got to work too much. And I certainly would get the inherent frustration of spending hours and hours and hours trying to convince a 17, 16 year old and their parents. And then, recruiting, I've covered recruiting in college athletics for a very long time. And I have seen really good people, assistant coaches and head coaches, like emotionally break down when they lose a recruit. Like it is.
Yes. Yes.
They've spent years working to get, especially in basketball, man, because it's one guy. They have spent years. They have taken time away from their family. They have done this. They have an emotional connection, a real connection, but you can only play in one spot, and then you lose that. It is devastating. So to get rid of that would be good, but at the same time, like, you're no longer just going to get to sit there at Ohio State and say, yeah, we never have a losing season.
Right.
I mean, well, now we got a draft, and the guy we really wanted going to Purdue. We can't just sit there and go, we're going to get the top. Any kid in the state of Ohio we want, we get. And then we go get some other guys. Like that, it's all of a sudden you're not having that. And so that's tough. You're going to have losing seasons. So it would be better, obviously, for the Purdues of the world or the whatever, that level school, but it would be much worse for the ones that have generally the juice. And really, at that point, does like a Ohio State and a Michigan say, well, I'm not sticking around the Big Ten and watching my players go to, like, none of these conferences have to stick together either, right? No, then there's Notre Dame. I don't even know what they would, one man draft, just, they would just be the same.
Yeah.
Them and UConn.
You need the Caleb Williamses of to say, I'm not going to commit to a single conference draft.
Well, I guess they'd be the same way. It'd just be the same thing. We just sign free agents. I don't know.
Yeah.
But hey, look, if you're, this is the thing for players, and they're going to be employees, they're going to have to give some stuff up.
Yeah.
You know, right now, as not being employees, and I think these collectives and stuff, I think they got it better than they ever will.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know that they realize that.
Nope.
They have all the freedom because you're not an employee. And the Supreme Court is saying you can put no restrictions on an employee, on a non-employee, the same way your university has no power over the regular student. Want to transfer? Go ahead. You want to get another job? Go ahead. Whatever. We're not watching Susie the sophomore. We're not watching you. You have all the juice, but when you're an employee, now you're going to have to negotiate terms of a contract. You're going to have your union collectively bargain. And if the teams say, look, man, you can't transfer. So like if as the players rushing to employment status, I don't know if that's a great idea.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, be careful what you wish for sure. And there's a lot of people cheering on the evolution towards employment status, and I get it, I understand it, but what comes along with it might be a dose of reality that curbs some of the current advantages that the players have, athletes have.
Yeah, there's no doubt that right now, this second, at least maybe all of college athletes, but certainly college, major college football and basketball players have it probably better than they ever will. There's just so much freedom, right, to move and to transfer. There's so many amenities and resources because of the recruiting that we just spent time on there. And then they're getting paid in a competitive market without any regulation and any framework or any contracts. So it's kind of a free-for-all for them right now. I don't think in a new employment model, and you know, we talked about this before. Let me kind of start over and say that the SEC Big Ten's joint venture, as we discussed on here before, is to find a model that will have some structure and framework, but will compensate the athletes directly, and to try to settle the house case, to find a model to do that. And whatever model that they come up with, or that the NCAA comes up with, or whoever, to settle the case, will be potentially the model used in the future. And whatever that model is while it will maybe pay athletes directly, it will also include, almost certainly going to include, some kind of restrictions on athletes in a framework of structure, whether it be contracts or any kind of other regulation, transfer, movement. There'll be some restrictions. And I think that's what's going on right now when it comes to coming up with a model and settling the house case, is conversations probably, I don't know this for sure, but probably between college athletic leaders and the plaintiffs or lawyers of the NCAA and college conferences in the plaintiffs of the house case, trying to figure out what's fair moving forward. Well, if we pay you this, if we pay athletes this, you know, 10%, 20%, 30% of our revenue, then we want, you know, binding contracts. So we want one-time transfer only, or we want, you know, so there's going to be, I'm going to assume there's going to be some regulation going forward. They'd have to sell that to the plaintiff's lawyers, obviously. But there will be something going forward. I just don't think that in the future, you're going to have even the best players making $2 million a year. Now that's happening, right? Quarterbacks. I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know that the backup running back in the SEC, which I know a couple of them, you know, maybe they get 5 to 10 carries a game. I don't know that those backup running backs are going to be making $200,000 a year in a new model. So everything's changing, and I don't know if a draft is realistic. But a draft would also be, by the way, guys, would be like probably in a lot of ways, that would be a concession. You know, if they offered that in a plaintiff deal or whatever, that'd probably be a concession for players, because guess what? They can't pick where they want to go in a draft. So that would be kind of a concession.
It'd be a big concession. Big concession.
Yeah. Big concession. Yeah. No. And then the other thing too, yes, is Ross, what you're saying, that I would think, other than wage scale, that also freedom of movement will be curtailed. I don't think if you're going to be entering into contracts that are not probably going to allow you to just go this year, that school, next year, the other school, third year, third school, fourth year, fourth school, which right now they can do.
Yeah, unless they technically are going to try to limit those transfers, right?
Or yeah, no? Well...
I don't think they're going to be able to, but they're not. Yes, but I agree. If you ask an NFL scout what they wish, or NFL agent what they wish, it'd be like a free agency every single year.
Yeah.
I mean, entry into the league. They used to have that, and these guys would sign. Remember, Sam Bradford signed like a $75 million contract, and yeah. Matthew Stafford, like, and some of them don't pan out. Stafford did, Bradford didn't, right? The entry, and it used to make drafting a quarterback in the first round a risk.
Yeah.
And it would push quarterbacks into the second round because unless you were surefire, you didn't want to pay that money because you're and too much of your salary cap's up in a bust. Like, the players have it better now than they probably will as employees. So be yep. careful what you wish for. All right. Got to get to a break. All right, quick, Pat. What do you got?
No. Go ahead. Go to break.
Okay. Let's go to break. We'll be back right after this. All right. We're going to get to the helmet communication. But, Pat, you had a story for us.
Yeah, a couple of
story
things.
Story time with Uncle Pat.
No, a couple of personal anecdotes. This is from the world of swimming, where my kids were all part of the recruiting process. But one, talking about how much a coach will invest in trying to get a prospect, and then when they don't get them, how much it hurts. the one school did a phenomenal job recruiting my daughter. I mean, they did everything right, but she did not choose that school. She chose Stanford instead.
Pat's daughter was an Olympic swimmer, Rick yeah. Forty, in case you're new to the yeah. show.
Yep.
Coveted recruit.
She chose wisely. But the coach of the school, that one of the schools she did not choose, was so unhappy about it. It was 7 years before that coach talked to me again. And I'm around the sport. I'm around the events. I cover the big events. Seven wow. years. It took quite a while to get over that. And I don't think it was like, you know, out of spider hatred. It's just like, God, you crushed me. I thought I was going to get your daughter. And so, I mean, that happens. It does happen. I talked to another swimming coach who's at the very absolute top of the game. He missed out on a couple of guys in like October. I talked to him in January. He's still fuming that he didn't get these guys. So, I mean, that's the way it goes. That's in football, guaranteed. Basketball, absolutely. You can grab a coach and say, hey, remember in 1992 when you didn't get
oh, yeah.
Jason Kidd or something?
Oh yeah.
They'll go. They're
bitter. They're always yeah. bitter. That's why listening to them say, well, NIL, I didn't get a player because it was always somebody. It was yeah. the uncle. It was this. I have 2 points. One, if I could go 7 years without talking with Pat, that would just be. that guy is my hero. He got to go 7 years angry. I've been angry at Pat for 7 years. And I haven't. No. How much Stanford pay you? What'd they pay you? Let's tell the truth now. Brooke, her eligibility is gone. She's doing the Peace yeah. Corps. Did you get a car? Did she get a car? Did you get free drinks at Kearns? What did you get? We know there was cheating involved in this. What did you get? Tell the truth now.
Full room and board, tuition expenses.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I hate to tell you, but swimming, there's just not a lot under the table there. Hate to tell you. Mm-hmm. I think she did get a t-shirt. She probably wasn't supposed to at least one stop.
Let's go. There's somebody in Indianapolis. They're perking up. There's an entire
statute
enforcement.
Statute of limitations.
What does the NCAA enforcement staff do these days?
If they want to chase a seven-year-old t-shirt, they can talk to me. Eight-year-old now.
It's like the police, the guy who gets into law enforcement takes over like a one-stop light. There's nothing going on. Like, what? Yeah. Thought I was going to bust criminals. Like, there's only 40 people here. What are they doing? I don't know. Here you go. Go get it. Stanford swimming. Handing out t-shirts. Just t-shirts are flying around Palo Alto.
They gotta fund the slippery noodle parties sometimes.
I know. This is dangerous. All right. Helmet communication. The Connor Stallions Memorial law.
Yeah, contributor to the game.
It's like the guy who invented the shot clock is in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Yeah. I think Connor Stallions should be in the College Football Hall of Fame for getting helmet communication. Now, at the same time, we worry about the jobs of those like seven grad assistants yeah, right. that would wear purple shirts and stand along the sideline doing like mime yeah. and holding up like a sign that had like SpongeBob SquarePants, a slice of pizza, and like Conor McGregor on it. And all of a sudden, somehow, like the team would run this integral, like, you know, double reverse wheel route to the quarterback play. And you're like, you got all of that from the
Dan, I've got good news for you. Those aren't going away.
Oh,
I don't think they're all going away. That's
even
the thing,
with helmet communication.
Even with helmet communication.
Because they don't huddle. Because they don't huddle.
Well, there's no huddling, but also only one, you know, we can get to the rules of this, only one player on each side of the ball is allowed to have the helmet communication.
Right.
If there were more than one, two, maybe four, I think you would see those signs and stuff go away. But players on the team, some players on the team are still going to have to get their signs from the sideline.
What is
and
the
that's
point?
Why a few coaches wanted it to be at least two, if not three, players with the capability on the field at one time, so you could have a player in each position group then tell their other position mates or signal to their other position mates. And now with just one, it's going to make it where you at least have some of those signs, I think, on the sideline.
So what is the point?
what is the point?
Yeah. I mean, it'll cut down.
Like, I'm back, baby. I'm back.
I think it'll still reduce it some. I do. I think it'll probably dramatically reduce it, but I think for the most part, you know, they'll still be there.
So it's only like you have to tell the receivers what to do or something like that?
Yeah. Right. Like a good example.
Presumably the blocking pattern, the QB could tell.
Right. The QB could tell the linemen in the backfield, and it would be the receivers looking at the sideline. On defense, you know, it's probably going to be a linebacker. A linebacker could tell the defensive line, but like the safeties, they might have to look to the sideline. You know, it could be things like that.
What's the opposition to three or four guys getting it?
Too many, too expensive. It's the same opposition that the NCAA
too expensive.
In general, you know. Well, you need more devices and helmets. And
I mean,
have you ever been to a college? These people ever walk through their college campus? Every kid has earbuds in. Not one kid on their entire campus is walking through campus. Go to the busiest time of day, go to the busiest spot on campus, stand there. Not one kid doesn't have earbuds in. Everybody is communicating wirelessly on your entire 40,000 person campus. How is this able to happen when we can't do it over here?
It's an issue that extends 100 years, Dan, in why the NCAA, in a way, is collapsing, right? It's too
Snapchat
big.
Snapchat them. Snapchat them.
There are too many Snapchat.
Not
there
one
too
kid.
Many schools.
Let them have a cell phone in the back of their, like, put a little pocket in their football pants, right? And before the play, send them a snap. Every 19-year-old in the country will see that. They will not leave it unopened. That'll be the thing.
Yeah.
Did you just leave the defensive coordinator unopened? We're breaking up. No, they will see that Snapchat, put it back in, and run that play to perfection. It will be like the 2000 Rams offense. That's how elite and efficient it will be if you just communicate to the players with Snapchat.
Here's the other really drastic option. If you feel like you need more communication, more players, or you're just going to have to run the risk of your signs being stolen, you could call a huddle. You know, mm-hmm.
Well, that was
drastic. I know, but you
remember
could.
Alabama said that was a problem in the Rose Bowl. Michigan huddled.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
They know, like, they huddled, and it's like, oh, what a concept.
That's right. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with this groundbreaking game plan?
Speaking of groundbreaking, it took college football 30 years basically to do this. You know, the NFL did it like 30 years ago, the helmet comms. And again, the reason goes back to the same reason why you wouldn't have multiple players on one side of the ball. And that's because of expenses, because the NCAA is too big, has too many schools that don't all have the same resources. I heard in the meeting over helmet comms, there was a discussion of the wearables. Which would potentially get rid of all signage, because each player would have like an Apple Watch sort of thing on their wrist, and you could look at it for the play. That would get rid of all signs, and it didn't pass because too many small colleges, I believe, thought that it was it's too expensive. It's going to overdo their budget.
And Old Dominion and Texas State are sitting there like, wait a minute, we got to buy Apple Watches for 110 guys.
They already have Apple Watches.
Those are going to get broke. They're going to get broken.
What about, isn't there a commercial where they got a guy, he's got this like, I think.
In the helmet. Yeah. Correct. Also probably expensive.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, the Power Five could do it, maybe even the FBS, but you know, everybody's on these committees. All these divisions are on these committees.
I'm going to get like three calls from ADs going, oh, you didn't mention how much Division III's effing us up.
Yep.
Yes. Give me a break. Just give me a break on this. I mean, this should have been solved so many years ago. I get it. It was a little like they will break down. There will be problems. They are in the NFL. There's times the NFL's got to be like, they'll announce it at the game. They'll say, at least in the press box, they'll say the Bears are their signal isn't working, so the Packers are not using theirs, and then they resort to something else. But considering the uproar over Connor Stallion stealing signs, it seems like a pretty easy solution to it. I don't know.
They have tablets now too. Tablets on the sidelines.
Tablets.
Watch video replays and all that. And then the 2-minute warning. We're going to have a 2-minute warning in college football. There's that too. More like the NFL.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this two-minute warning? Okay. Now, this is not an extra TV timeout. They're claiming.
They're claiming that it is not, that they will move one of the other timeouts in the second and fourth quarters so you don't get the touchdown, extra point, kickoff, timeout. You know, timeouts after the touchdown and then after the kickoff. We'll see. I know this. It was not specifically laid out in writing in the NCAA announcement of this. And lacking that, I would like to see it in writing, just to say.
We know they'd never go back on that.
I don't trust these people.
No.
I don't trust them.
No reason to. 2-minute warning, do you care? I mean, the 2-minute warning provides extra excitement to at the end of NFL games, it becomes it's obviously a strategy. This is more ways your coach will screw up the clock so you can yell at them, right? Yeah. More reasons to be angry at your head coach, which you're always looking for. You blew the game. Why'd you take a timeout there? You could have done it after. Did we need that? I don't know. It's not moving the needle for me.
No, I mean, to me, it's perfunctory, and again, just more NFL light than anything else.
What is the Ross? You're hearing why we want to do this?
The 2-minute warning. Okay,
the TV wants that timeout at that spot. Obviously, guaranteed.
Yes,
it's better at 2 minutes than at 4 minutes and 36 seconds. Right?
Yeah, that might be the main reason. But what they said publicly was the main reason is that all of the changes, all the different rules that happen inside of 2 minutes of a half, you know, whether it's instant replay or the out of bounds rule or the clock running rule. Remember, the clock stops, inside of two. They're saying that. That is the point in time at the 2-minute warning that they can now kind of start all that in unison. That's kind of how they like publicly announced it as this is why we're doing it, because we're setting an actual time that all of this then happens. I don't know. I mean, can believe what you want. I kind of assume that it has a little bit of influence from TV.
There's some discussion that there is going to be a proposal for television of a Manning cast, you know, the Manning cast, our Manning brothers on Monday Night Football, a Manning cast type show featuring our unemployed GOAT coaches, Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, where they would host a show during the game. And I guess provide their coaching, insight and tell stories. These are two great storytellers and all of that. I don't know that either is quite the television presence of Peyton Manning. It's very hard. It's a little harder to do than you think. Like, do they just grumble, or do they get like obsessed about one play and keep running it back? Like, What is the tackle doing here? He's supposed to pull. Like, do they get angry? I don't know. But it would probably be more NFL driven. But could if we get, and now they've had these coaches rooms, you know, full cast. ESPN tries all these different things. I've never really taken to those. I'm either at the big game or I just like watching the regular broadcast. I will watch Manning cast a lot on Monday night, especially if it's not a particularly huge game. Because it's really good, but I think Eli and Peyton are uniquely talented. Peyton particularly at his ability to host a show, and then Eli's one-liners and his ability to just roast his older brother is fantastic. But it's a very unique thing. So, but would you, do you think this would work beyond the curiosity? Let's say they have Bill Belichick, the Belichick Saban cast, for like the Michigan Texas game in week two. Would you want to watch that?
I would certainly give it a shot because I think it'd be intriguing because they are, I mean, we've all heard from both of those guys, and when they are into a football topic, they will teach you a lot and they will insightfully describe what's going on and why it's going on. And, you know, how decisions were made and that sort of thing. So I would certainly give it a chance. I think they would have to have a host who could pitch. I don't see either of those guys in a host role. Like you said, Peyton can do anything on broadcast. And he can be a host. He can direct a show. I mean, he can drive it. And he can be funny and insightful. And then his brother comes in with, and they have that chemistry. These two guys, first of all, they're both much older. Secondly, they don't come at anything really from an entertainment perspective. And so I think they would probably need a little bit of direction. Like Urban Meyer's great breaking down plays when he's got Jerry DiNardo directing him in breaking down plays. You don't want Urban Meyer hosting a show. And I would say the same thing with these guys, but I'd watch it. I'd absolutely give it a chance. Well, at least once.
Would we be able to understand Belichick? There's a lot of mumbling that goes on there. I wonder if he would be able to speak eloquently and loud enough for us to hear him. Maybe he would in this case. I would enjoy just listening to Saban. I mean, you know, Saban on when Saban speaks, he does so you know, with a lot of meaning behind it. And I think that any kind of breakdown, we've talked about his X's and O's breakdown after Alabama games the last few years were really good. So I think those would be some really thoughtful and insightful things, especially if he's like doing a Manning cast or alternate cast of one of Alabama's games, would be pretty interesting to hear.
I think it originally, I think he's told this story. Actually, I know he's told this story, so I'm going to say his name, but Kyle Brandt, who does NFL Network, Good Morning Football.
Yeah.
Great guy, great broadcaster, really fun. Mm-hmm. NFL personality, big Kyle Brandt fan. He auditioned to be the host of the Manning cast as the, like, he'd be the third, other than Cooper, yeah. He'd be the third Manning brother. And he would bring a lot to it because he's really witty. But he said after auditioning, I'm not needed.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's no need, I think. And then it just was like, I think, let me see, I got the thing. We did a game when it ended. One of the executives who was running things called me right after, said, what do you think? And I said, the hype is real. They don't need a host. They don't need a third person. I think you should just do it with two of them. Good job, Kyle Brandt, to being like, I don't need that job. Like, what a guy, right? I'd be like, I totally held this together. He can't do anything. Would have been good. There is a very funny also, if you want, and if you don't follow him, you should. Joey Molinaro, who does the Saban, he recently did the Nick Saban and Bill Belichick podcast where he invites both of them. Go find it on social media. He's one of the greatest follow. He's so funny. And Nick Saban reading a manscaping ad for the pod. I'm just going to leave it at that. It's just phenomenal. All right. Any other football news that we need to get to?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. So get to my favorite part of the show.
Ah, yes.
Pat, this story is down in your area. Maybe you were involved. I don't know. Oldham County, Kentucky. Yep. Oldham County. Yeah, you know that
not,
place?
Not far away at all. It's part of the Louisville metro area. Yep.
Okay. In Buckner, Kentucky, Oldham County High School. You know, it's getting to be senior prank season.
Yeah.
The high school seniors get a little restless. We got a few high school kids actually listening to this pod. Quite amazing. But they do because we're cool. We're cool.
Yeah, we're extremely cool.
We're very in touch with the youth. Anyway, be careful with the senior pranks. And one young lady, of all people, at Oldham County learned this the hard way. We'll just say Oldham County high school experienced an unexpected evacuation. They evacuated the entire school. And based on the picture, this is a very large school. Evacuated this Tuesday morning when a strong gas odor prompted concern for student and staff safety. The incident led to a swift response from police, fire department, emergency services after the school resource officer detected the suspicious smell around 11 a.m. However, the source was not a gas leak, but a prank orchestrated by a 17-year-old female student. This
gassy
student
prank.
Yes, gassy. The finding pointed to a liquid substance the student had poured into two trash cans. She brought two cans of the always funny fart spray where you spray and it smells like a fart. She opened
I've
the
never
two bottles.
Of this before.
Yeah.
You've never heard of it?
No.
Really?
Well, it's the dumbest thing ever because who the hell wants, even if you win the prank, you have to smell it's yeah. smell something unpleasant. It's stupid. But I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, you know, this woman, she thought
we're
it'd be
funny. We're not arbiters of taste here.
She thought it would be. I mean, look, the pie in the face was once really funny in like cinema. Like at one point in time, you threw a pie in someone's face. The entire audience laughed and went, oh my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Okay. So anyway, you spray the fart and then you go, your buddy, hey, you farted. I don't know. Like that's someone's selling this product, right? But instead of going one spray at a time, she took two whole bottles and dumped them into a trash can, which led to an enormous smell. Yeah. An enormous smell that led to the clearing of the entire school. So this woman is now
success. Success. I mean, like as successful as any prank in the history of college or high school pranks, right? You cleared out the whole damn school for like multiple hours.
Yes, yeah. this is my question for the people's
court. This woman
court.
Is winning.
Miscreant or school hero? Because you got the day off and you really didn't
hurt
anybody.
An easy one.
Right?
Total school hero. And that like I think the story also said too that like there was 10 students who felt, you know, overcome and sick.
Seven.
Whatever. Like,
yeah, seven.
Sure they did. It's like I sense home. An opportunity here. I think I'm leaving. I'm sick. I gotta go home. Sure.
Yeah, they were at Taco Bell like 3 minutes later, getting lunch early.
Yeah,
like
that's right. Working up their own fart spray.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Yeah, school
hero. For sure, hero. Absolutely. That's the only choice here. I mean, good job, senior.
Obviously, because unfortunately, the school shootings and the incidents at schools, it's terrifying when all of a sudden law enforcement is like, there's a panic moment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you're strutting back in 20 years later at the reunion as like,
oh,
you were the one.
About this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, your legacy is secure. Every year from now on, they'll be like, oh, remember when Kelly put the spray? Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Here comes fart spray Kelly. Hey.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not. You're like, don't tell my kids. Like, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think you're total school hero. High fives. I mean, she's probably going to get, you got to get some kind of discipline, a little detention. You know, custodial crew after something. I don't even know if they're allowed to do that. What kind of punishments do they even give in high school anymore? They're probably nothing.
Yeah, detention or suspension, I guess. I don't know.
Mm. I don't know. The days of the ruler whack your knuckles are
no,
over.
No, those are over. Yeah, that's
that stopped
it.
Like when I was actually in school, I feel like.
We had to like work
what,
on
what
this.
What did Coach Dell used to do? I mean, lay the law down on them?
Mm, there was a belt involved. There was also a paddle. A large wooden paddle. Coach Dell didn't play as a mean, you know, grizzled high school football coach who at the time probably bench pressed 400 pounds.
Whoa. Ooh.
Coach Del could lay a whooping on you. Well, it really cleaned up your act in life.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Straight and narrow.
Yeah, I heard a parent say that. They're like, well, my mother tried to keep us from drinking by this. And I'm like, every time I see you, you're drinking. How did this work? I don't think it is. Did it work then? No. Did it teach you a lifetime of a good relationship with alcohol? No. Okay. Maybe try something different. Or don't care. Anyway, so we're not encouraging. Don't do the fart spray thing. But I could see this becoming like a trend. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. This could sweep TikTok. They've come up with dumber trends on TikTok. So
we'll keep it. It could be an ongoing saga as we hit spring. We'll keep an eye on it with the senior pranks. Yeah.
We're going to be alert to this. Oldham County High, I hope you enjoyed your day off. And I hope you spent it listening to the pod. All right. We'll be back next week with more. March Madness is coming. We'll get into more basketball. My big thing I'm rooting for this week is Indiana State. I want Indiana State to make the big dance so we get more Robbie Avila. Pat, did you meet Robbie Avila? If you've not seen this guy.
Just published 2,700 words on Indiana State and Robbie Avila.
Go to SI.com. He is a sizable player for Indiana State. He's got these big dark glasses. They call him either Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He is white guy, or Larry Nerd.
Or Larry Blurred.
Or vision. Larry Blurred because of the vision. Yeah, those are his three nicknames.
There's actually more. Steph Blurry and College Jokic, because he plays a little like Nikola Jokic.
College Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need...
You got to see the dude. You got to watch him.
You got to watch him. If the Valley Tournament is on this weekend, watch. Hopefully Robbie Avila is in it. I haven't been this excited since Kevin Pitsnoggle was draining threes. He was my favorite. I think his story was that he learned to shoot because his driveway was crooked. So he never learned to really dribble. Yeah, he had to make the shot ball was going to roll down the hill. So he got really good at it, which is also how Del Curry learned to play.
Hmm?
Del Curry had the same thing in rural Virginia. And then he taught, and not only was Del a hell of a shooter, but then he taught his sons how to shoot. But yeah, that basket. You can read all about an epic athletes. So this book series. Anyway, just saying. We'll talk to you later.